Hey folks, welcome to the Orange and Blue News podcast. We got the whole gang here tonight from Orange and Blue News. John Supini, your columnist, Brad Sturdy, basketball analyst, Kedrick Prince, Alec Bussey, and Jim Cotter all with us here tonight for the podcast. And we're going to talk, guys, about the Illinois football staff. Brett Bielema, of course, was hired as the new head coach at Illinois. He's off and running. He's got a lot of his staff in place, and I think there's two more positions yet to fill. But, you know, going down the line here, offensive coordinator Tony Peterson, offensive line coach Bart Miller, running back coach Corey Patterson, who was retained from Lovie Smith's staff, tight end Ben Miller is the tight end coach, Ryan Walters, defensive coordinator, D-line Terrence Jamison, linebacker coach Andy Boo. And, you know, he's putting his staff together pretty quick. He's tapping into old contacts that he had in previous jobs. And, you know, starting with John here, what kind of jumps out at you about this staff so far?
Well, to me, it's a solid staff because he's hiring college coaches. You know, the thing with Lovie was I didn't understand how he was or why he was going the direction of hiring, you know, guys with so much pro experience, guys with limited recruiting experience and recruiting contacts. And even, you know, like a player personnel director, it seemed like he was setting it up as an NFL franchise, whereas it's a different game. You got to go get the players to make this work. And I think Bielema's has put together a solid staff with recruiters. He's got guys that have experience in Chicago. He's got guys that's got experience in Indianapolis and in St. Louis. So I think, you know, to me, this is, if I'm an Illini fan, I'm getting kind of excited because you can't have, you know, you can't have wins without the players. And so I think it's just, it's a different thing moving forward now. I can see where this can work.
Kedrick, is, you know, the big thing this week has been the kids from Illinois feel like the Illinois coaching staff now is taking them more seriously and reaching out. Is this real or is this just the new of having a new coach in town? Are these kids, you think, from the state of Illinois going to take a harder look at the program, or they just going to give them a token look now that Bielema is reaching out to them?
I personally think I think it's for real this time. And I learned something today. I mean, I don't know. I mean, a lot of people don't know what I do on this for another job. I mean, I'm a counselor at a high school, and one of our high school in Bend, Ohio was one of the most successful programs in the state. I met with our football coach today, and he was, you know, he said that he produced 10 Division I athletes. And he told me that Bielema called him yesterday, and that there's nobody on this team that they're recruiting. Now, this is in Iowa, but I live on the border. So to answer your question, you know, Lovie talked about doing these things like John mentioned, and that's he had all these pro guys. Brett's a guy who's looking in the college ranks, and he's going to be aggressive. So he has called coaches that are on the border. Because obviously Brett's from the Quad City area. So he's going to hold true to his word. And when you talk to the recruits now, you can see a difference, because when you talk to them before, they said the politically correct thing, Illinois offered me a scholarship. But two or three kids I talked to this week, they're making the comments. They're saying what was said. I don't have to ask. It's like pulling teeth. You know, right away when I talked to Deuce the other day, his comment was, "Oh, my parents loved it. You know, they loved it. I can't wait to get on there. I can't wait to go see the campus." Those are things that I've just not heard from football recruits in a long, long time. But the key is going to be if they could commit. And I'll make this last comment. One of the things that Brett Bielema told our coach at our high school was that he's going to corner the market, and he's going to make sure every kid knows that they've been talked to, and that Illinois is a place where they should go. They can't use facilities as an excuse anymore. He's hired a good quality staff, and he is going to win games. He made it really clear that it's not going to be a year where he wins two games and then next two or three years. I mean, well, he wins eight or nine games, then next 2 years, you know, he's back down to one or two or three games. So I have confidence in him and the kids. I can see this turning a little bit.
You know, he's saying the right things, definitely. Members of his staff are saying the right things. They're reaching out to the coaches here in the state. They're reaching out to the top kids. You know, but I think just about every coach that I've covered has done the same thing, and it just didn't pan out for him. You know, everybody's recruiting the Chicago area now. Even the SEC is coming up to Chicago. They're coming up to St. Louis, recruiting that city, Indianapolis, all these places that have been – you know, hot spots for Illinois in the past. So there may, you know, with the new coach, I always see a little bit of naivete. You know, they're a little bit naive about what the situation actually is at Illinois and their ability to sell this program that hasn't won consistently in a long time. And you could say they probably haven't won consistently in our lifetimes. They won for a few years under a few coaches, but haven't been able to really put it together. And you know, he's, like I said, Brett Bielema is saying the right things. He's doing the right things, I think. But the proof is in the commitments and who they sign, you know, in February and next December. Brad Sturdy, our guy here, has got a lot of sources. In fact, Brad's sources have sources on top of that. So what's the word on the street out there, Brad, in the coaching fraternity about Brett Bielema and his staff that he's building here?
Yeah, you know, I've actually talked to some numerous high school coaches. One of the most, you know, biggest high school coaches, talked to Derek Leonard the other day. We were talking about one of his players, and he's from Rochester. Obviously, they've won like 7 state titles in the past 8 or 9 years. So he's a fantastic coach and has had some Division I players attend schools. And you know, he had a kid go to Illinois, Zach Grant, I think, you know, from a few years back. But he has Hank Beatty as a kid that they've offered in 2022. And Derek was talking about how, you know, already, I mean, Bielem has already done more probably than what the previous staff had done with him. And so I think that's impressive. Talking to a couple other guys too, they're impressed by this. Some schools up Chicago area schools that, you know, from the suburbs, different things, just having him reach out, I think has been really good. These guys wanted to be, they want to be wanted. I mean, they want them to, and it's not necessarily that you're going to take every kid that they have. That's not going to happen. And you're not going to get every kid they have. But I know Bielema actually talked to an alumni thing today. And he mentioned how his goal, there were 30, like the top 30 kids in the state. I mean, he knows they're not going to get all 30, but he'd like to get 10, 8, 8 of the top 30 or so, because he feels like he wants to build from within. Now, he talked about other regions he's going to recruit, but I think it's really impressive that he's already got you know, he already has a plan that he really wants to make the core be the state of Illinois, and the football coaches are responding.
What do you think, Brad, about the makeup of the staff in the recruiting territories? Do you think they're spreading it out enough and getting involved in places like Ohio and the Eastern Seaboard, Florida, Texas, all those places?
Yeah, no, they are. One thing, I talked to Gabe Yarman from the Missouri site when they hired defensive coordinator Ryan Walters, and he talked about how they were position oriented. So Walters has huge connections all around. In fact, one of his highest ranked commit this year was for Missouri was from Indianapolis. So Walters has done a really good job of, he's got a lot of connections, and that's just one example. But these guys have been around, they've recruited different areas, and they're going to have obviously their strongholds, but they're also, so he's got a really wide base, I guess. He can touch a lot of areas. He talked about Texas, Florida. Charlotte was an area he mentioned today, probably under recruited in Illinois in the past. And so, you know, obviously then state of Illinois, St. Louis, those areas. And he mentioned a lot of these places where they're going to recruit. And so it's really impressive to see how they have a plan. I think that's the difference between Bielema. Bielema's been there, done this. And so he has a plan for what he wants to accomplish. And that's been the impressive thing for me so far.
You know, just to throw this in there, but to ignore the state of Ohio for the last 5 years was one of the biggest oversights I've seen in recruiting at Illinois. And it also, you know, they had some leftovers from the previous staff and he who must not be named, Tim Beckman, he came from Ohio. He brought guys with him in that recruiting office that are from Ohio. They had good contacts with, you know, some of the better programs in that state, and to not go to probably the third biggest state in the country when it comes to high school football talent and try to recruit that state was just mind boggling to me why they didn't try to get in there. But shifting gears a little bit, we got two guys on our staff that are on campus every day at the University of Illinois, Jim and Alec. And one thing that kind of has jumped out at me, guys, is there's not a lot of players on the team jumping ship. And if they are jumping ship, they're going because they think they can make it at the next level. They're not going because they don't like the new coaching staff. But what have you heard on campus, Jim? How is the team kind of taking the coaching change? And do you think that most of them are going to stick around?
I personally think they are, because I think, you know, after they're, you know, each player had a initial conversation with Coach Bielema, as well as some of the position, you know, the positional staff. And I think they like what they see. They're not satisfied with what they had this past year. Of course, who wouldn't at 2-6? But, you know, it's you just, you know, got to figure out. This has been a crazy year. Everybody's getting another chance, basically. And, yeah, there's some guys that are going to be moving on to the next level because they're ready, I think. And, you know, there's some guys are leaving the program. Maybe they don't see that they fit into the scheme. But, you know, and talking with some of the assistant coaches like we have, I was really impressed with Aaron Henry today, the new defensive backs coach. And, you know, a lot of what Coach Bielema is doing is he's bringing in guys that he's personally had as a player or has worked with at other staffs, or if he hasn't directly worked with them, he knows somebody who has worked with them. And he's compiling a really good staff, I think. But, you know, you see, you know, campus isn't really it's desolate right now because everybody's still on break and everything. You don't see the players out, obviously, because they're, you know, probably gone home right now. But some of them are still mulling over their decisions and whatnot. But I think you're going to see a lot of them come back, and I think you're going to see a lot more of the defensive players coming back now that there's some people on staff that's been announced that they're going to like what they hear.
You know, going back when Lovie Smith took over the program, how many kids jumped ship the first year? Was it like 14 kids? That right from the get-go, Lovie put himself behind the eight ball. He just didn't have enough bodies on the team. Now, some of those guys, of course, they were not Big Ten level players, but they're guys that could have helped you on special teams. There are guys that could have been, you know, come in certain situations like a pass rushing situation. And he, you know, and Lovie's big thing was divorce is good sometimes, but to put yourself behind the eight ball like that, and to be he was kind of a Pollyanna when he, looking at the recruiting situation, thinking he could replace all 14 of those guys that he cut loose. And it, over 5 years, he never did replace them. They never had 85 scholarship players that I know of. They weren't able to make up that difference and get enough depth. Still didn't have enough depth at the end. And that's something obviously that Josh Whitman saw and that it was a big problem. What do you make, one more, Jim, what do you make of the quarterback situation? It's kind of a quandary that they're in. They do have Brandon Peters coming back. He fits the scheme. But the other guys were recruited by Rod Smith to run the read option and be a dual threat kind of quarterback. Do you think they need to get out there and beat the pavement and find a transfer?
That I really don't know, because, you know, with Peters coming back, he's obviously going to be the person that's probably going to be, you know, like you said, he fits the mold of, you know, what Tony Peterson runs in terms of an offense. But you got to figure that these other guys, Isaiah Williams, Deuce Spann, Matt Robinson, Caron Taylor, all those guys are kind of a similar player, and that Peters is more of a, you know, not in that vein. So, yeah, I think that they probably need to, but, you know, getting back to talking about, you know, how Lovie Smith recruited or not so, he didn't like to recruit into the high schools. And that was evident where, you know, the last couple of recruiting classes weren't very strong. He thought it was more like an NFL approach where you go out free agency and find guys that weren't happy elsewhere and bring them into the program. You see these guys, you know, Trayvon Sidney's leaving again. Josh Imaturbebe declared for the NFL, you know, declared for the draft. Daniel Imaturbebe, he's leaving. So it seems some of these guys that Lovie brought in that have only stayed a year or two, you want stability. You want guys that want to come into the program and stay. And, you know, and recruiting these, you know, high school kids from the state of Illinois, you know, because another thing with Bielema, and I'll get off this and let Alec talk, is, you know, Bielema being from the state of Illinois, you know, knowing the state pretty well, he's getting guys that have ties to the state of Illinois. I think they want to make that priority number one and then branch out and recruit some of these other areas, because Aaron Henry's from Florida. And of course, that's an area that, you know, has been okay for Illinois in the past. They've gotten some players out of Florida, but have they got the best players out of Florida? That's the thing that we need to find out. So, but that's my take on it.
you know, the quarterback position, I think Samari Collier can throw the football. But really,
oh, yeah, I forgot about Samari.
Yeah, and, you know, he's got a cannon arm. He's more of a pocket passer than he is a dual threat kind of guy. He can run if he has to, kind of like Brandon Peters. But he's only going to be a true freshman this year. And your backup quarterbacks were recruited to play a different position, so they're in a little bit of a quandary. And Brandon Peters hasn't stayed healthy for an entire season, except for maybe in a shortened season. But yeah, it's something to look at here in the offseason, what they try to do with the quarterback position. And it's something to watch that if they do bring in a transfer, you know, what does a guy like Isaiah Williams think about that? You know, does he see a future here at Illinois in this system? He's a primarily a runner. He can throw a little bit, but maybe something to watch here coming up this summer. You know, Alex, switching gears to the defense, man. We talk about players that fit or don't fit in the offense. I know that Brett Bielema wants to run a 3-4 defense eventually at Illinois. That's what they're going to change to. Whether it's in 2021 or not, we don't know because they haven't recruited the players to play it. But who are some of the guys you see that would on the roster now that would fit that 3-4? Maybe some edge rushers that can play the outside linebacker, maybe a guy who can play the nose tackle position in a different type of defense.
Yeah, to me, Doug, it's really interesting when you look at the way the roster's been constructed, and you and I have had conversations about this separately, but I think getting Isaiah Gay back this week for a fifth season is someone who's your prototypical outside linebacker, edge rusher in a 3-4 scheme, but he hasn't proven a lot of success just by looking at his numbers. Now, granted, I think a lot of that could be system. I mean, he's not a hand in the ground, super successful in a 3-point stance. So I think I'm really interested to see what he could do in a 3-4 defense. Seth Coleman is similar to him in terms of build, really fast guy off the edge. And Seth Coleman last season ended up taking Isaiah Gay's starting spot at the end of the season. And I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that how technical Seth Coleman had gotten during his redshirt year under the previous coaching staff with his hand placement and his ability to get around tackles and find a way into the backfield despite being slightly undersized or underweight. But I think that there's players that can run the 3-4 defense, but to do that, they need to add players to the transfer market unless they want to go back to the Lovie Smith route and Lovie's first couple of seasons where he's playing so many young freshmen and sophomores. And I don't think that that's necessarily the best way to get immediate success. And I think the quickest way to do that is to find a couple transfers within the portal that you can come in, insert into the scheme, and then drop into how you want to run it. And I think, to me, the best thing about this coaching staff so far and the things that they have said compared to the previous coaching staff is that they seem that they're really interested in putting players in the best position to be successful. We've seen Tony Peterson kind of change his offense a little bit to fit his players, and we've seen Ryan Walters do the same thing on the defensive side, and we've seen Brett Bielema be willing to adapt a little bit to what he's doing as well. So finding what makes the current roster successful in 2021, 2022, before you really start running in 2023, 24, and eventually 25, hopefully you're thinking you just have to build there slowly. Building a football program is a lot harder than it is to build a basketball program because you need at least 22 guys on the field compared to just 5 on a basketball court.
Well, their defensive linemen that they recruited in the 2020 class had some talented kids, but most of them were recruited to play strong side defensive end. And there's not too many of them in that class that can play standing up without their hand on the ground. And Seth Coleman to me is the prototypical rush linebacker in 3-4, and he's the one guy to look to. I think that can be good pass rusher down the line here. He was never going to be a star player in a 4-3 defense under Lovie Smith. He just was not going to get big enough. You know, he's a thin guy. He's got a small frame, but he's an athlete who can really run. And that's a kid to watch this spring if they have spring ball, just to see how he kind of fits as a rush linebacker. He's a better player standing up than he is with his hand on the ground. So back to the quarter, John, I know just from the look on your face, you got something to say about the quarterback position, and it's a little bit of a problem, and especially if Brandon Peters gets hurt. John, you're muted. Hey, John, you're muted, man.
I can't wait to hear his answer, though.
Ah, here we go.
There you go.
Hey, when we talked about in the regular season, you know, Isaiah Williams was so entertaining and electrifying and brought so much just in running the ball. But once you saw Brandon Peters come back and balance the offense, it made such a big difference to that program. But like you said, is he going to be durable enough to handle a full season? They need to, to me, I think they need to go out and get a quarterback. And if they can find a quarterback that's got another year or two of eligibility, I think that'd be better. But find a quarterback, but you got to have a plan of trying to keep Isaiah Williams on the roster. And you got to have a plan to give Isaiah Williams the ball every game. I can't believe that he ran for almost 200 yards in one game and didn't play the next game. Get him on the field and get him the ball. I don't care where he plays. Talk him, you got to recruit your own roster and talk kids into playing and being able to move them around. And that's, to me, that's what coaching, that's a big part of coaching, is get the guys in the program and then figure out where you can plug them in and talk them into where you want them to go. So I think they need to go out and get another quarterback and then figure out what they're going to do with Williams long-term.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And, Corey Patterson he's a guy that Isaiah Williams trusts a lot. They've known each other since he was coaching Pee Wee football in St. Louis, played for him in high school. And I think it's a situation where Corey will have to sit down with Isaiah Williams and say, look, your future in this game is not at the quarterback position. You're only 5'9". That's probably being generous, but you could have a future in this game with the ball in your hands in different ways, whether it's in the slot or an all-purpose type of guy. That's probably his future in the game. And a heart-to-heart talk is probably merited with Isaiah Williams. One last thing about the football program, John, still with you. And, building a program from the ground up, in my lifetime, we've only seen one guy do it. Mm-hmm. Building from the ground up, maybe two if you count Ron Zook. And I know you liked what Zook did, and you thought he was getting really close. But if you go back to Mike White with me in 1980, that's the only guy who really built a program from the ground up. What's Brett Bielema dealing with here in terms of the program? Is he a guy that has what it takes to build from the ground up and build a consistent winner?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that's the million for the $4.2 million question. He seems to be going about it the right way. I think he's got some credentials behind him that people will maybe listen to him whenever he wants to speak with them. And he is going about the right way, because you've got to build relationships with people. He's got a staff that, and he's taking the point on it. He's trying to build relationships with guys, with coaches, with people in the state. And I think you got to work your way out. And I don't know, Brad and Kedrick know a lot more about where they're going to go after they leave the state than I do, but Mike White, I talked to Mike White, seemed like it was toward the end of the Zook era. So it's probably close to 10 years ago. And Mike White, I said, what's it take to win here? And he said, you got to come in here knowing where you're going to go recruit, outside the state of Illinois, because he said, you're not going to go in Chicago and corner it. Downstate Illinois does not have enough players to fill the whole roster. So you got to come in here knowing where you're going to go get your players outside the state lines. So you got to have a pipeline somewhere. White went to California. So, and then he branched off into other areas. But the big question to me is, where is Bielema going to go when he leaves the state? Where, what area in the country is he going to go to really lean on it? Zook leaned on Florida, leaned on DC. I'm interested to see where Bielema goes outside the state.
Yeah, just one last thing about football. And if I'm Brett Bielema and I look at the teams that I'm going to be competing against, on the field and for recruits, the Big Ten West doesn't scare me all that much. Minnesota, what did it take? 2 years for them to win double-digit games under their new coach. So that just shows you that it only takes a couple of recruiting cycles to get things rolling and start winning in the Big Ten West. And Nebraska is down. Scott Frost not getting it done there in Nebraska. He might be on a hot seat next year. Iowa is Iowa. They're always going to be exactly the same team with guys that look like the same players that they had on the field the previous year. That division's not real scary, and I think Illinois can win if they start getting some good recruiting and they establish some kind of identity. But let's jump to basketball, guys. Brad, I want to start with you. You're the hoops guys, but Going back to 2004 and 2005, Bruce Weber was here for his second year, I think, right? And they won a lot, and they went to the Final Four, to the championship game, and lost to North Carolina. And then after that, recruiting just fell off a cliff, right? For some reason, and you know, if you know why, you can tell me. But for some reason, Bruce Weber could not get recruits, and we were covering it at the time, and we had our hot list of kids that they were looking at, and just one after the other, they started missing. And you were wondering, what the hell is going on here? Why do they keep missing? They just went to the national championship game. And my question right now, Brad, is are we seeing history repeat itself? I know that Underwood hasn't had the postseason success because of COVID last year, but what's going on with basketball recruiting? Is there an issue? Or do you think that they're going to start bringing some guys in?
Well, I mean, obviously, it's been a disappointing fall when you look at who they were in on and who last couple cycles. So, I mean, you know, you look at you go back to the guys that they've had on campus over the years have been, I mean, you know, from Shibwe to Liddell to Shannon to, you know, they were in deep with, you know, and they obviously got Kofi. But and then, you know, this past year when they were able to, you know, they you know, obviously Curbelo and Miller, great incoming freshman, and Coleman Hawkins, who I like quite a bit. This year, just Luke Goody, but and they had some fantastic wings, and that's really where they're lacking right now, is like an athletic wing on this team. But the other part of this is, I think recruiting is different today than it was in 2005 too, because there's going to be so many options through the transfer portal that are immediately eligible, unlike back when Weber was doing it. So there are some similarities. I mean, there's no question. They were in on guys. They aren't getting it done. You know, they're not closing. You can blame Underwood, whoever. What it is, what it is. But the one thing that's different is Underwood actually put together this team. This is his team. Unlike when, you know, Coach Weber had his team, it was the leftovers. The key guys were, you know, D. Brown, Darren Williams, Luther Head, James Augustine all came to play for Bill Self. So I think that's the biggest difference. That's why I have a different idea. I also think this staff is suited to get guys. And they have so many connections. You know, you talk to Orlando Antigua and everybody knows O. I mean, everybody, you talk to guys and they're like, oh yeah. I told him this the other day. I said, you know, every kid that you're recruiting, I talk to him, somehow their dad knows you, or their brother knows you, or there's somehow somebody knows you and you have a connection. So he's got those great connections. Chin Coleman's been around the AAU scene. He's been all over the country. So he's got connections in California, Arizona, et cetera, et cetera. So they've been able to do this. And Stephen Gentry, obviously, with his connections in Texas and even in the Midwest and Indiana, going to get Goody. So he's done it. They've got a good base of guys, and they all recruit the state hard. And I think that's the difference. When Weber missed on guys, he didn't have a plan B. You look at Underwood's plan B was Andres Feliz. I mean, that's the reality. I mean, those are the kind of guys they got. Georgie Bashanisvili, who is a quality player, was a plan B. Those are the kind of kids they end up with. And that's why I feel good. Coleman Hawkins, although they took him early, there were other guys they could have taken, but they liked him. And the good talent evaluation is the kind of kid. Even at Brandon Lieb, who some people don't like, he's a freshman and they think he's, you know, this and that. But the thing about Lieb is he had a bunch of high major offers and they went in and just took him at the end. And so they waited until the end. They took him. He was a kid headed to prep school. Now they get him in a weight program. Those are the kind of kids that they're able to develop. And back when Weber was there, he brought a kid in, very similar kid in like a Mike Tisdale, and he had to play him as a freshman because he didn't have the depth on the program. Now you get Lieb, he doesn't have to play. He can redshirt, and that's what you want to kind of create. And I think that's probably the biggest difference that I see. But I can see why people would make correlations. At the end of the day, you got to win games, and that's what it comes down to. And we'll see what they're able to do after this season.
Okay, Kedrick, so they got Luke Goody in the 2021 class. Who are some names out there still on the board in this class that they could sign in the spring that you think could be positive additions to the program?
Well, you know what? It's like Brad said, and I have to give the staff credit. Right now it's kind of tough because it seems like what they're doing is they have plan Bs. And with their plan Bs, they're very, very secretive about the kids who they try to bring in. Like, I'll give an example. we all knew about Andre Cabello. Well, excuse me, we didn't know about Andre Cabello. Then all of a sudden, Illinois is reading for a kid like that. But they, you know, they have missing a lot of kids. And the one kid I really like to see, if they had a chance on going back to the 21 class, would be the Wesley, you know, Cordette kid. He's a kid that I kind of like, that I wish that they could kind of pull in. You know, he's that athletic wing guy, you know, out of West Oaks Academy, Florida, that I wish they could try to pull off. Brad mentioned the fact that they need that wing guy and somebody, you know, that they really, really want to be in that position. But they have missed on a lot of guys, you know, in this class. But and who's to say that now with the way this whole season is going to go, you know, I'll give you a really weird situation. I'm sitting here, we're doing a Zoom cast, and Namari Barnett texts me. And he's giving me his list of schools that he just narrowed them down to, you know. So I'm asking him right now, you know, what is it going to take to narrow that list down? And Illinois is going to be on that list whenever he narrows his final list down. So, but, you know, there's just been on so many kids, but I think they've missed on so many. You know, Cordell Charles is another kid. He's another 6'6 athletic wing. I just don't know if there's a plan B because they don't like to say it. And I'll tell you what's really weird, and I give them credit for this. They know the media is good, but sometimes when you talk about kids that you want to recruit, other coaches find out, and sometimes they lose those kids. So I think, you know, they're not always putting all their eggs out there in one basket, letting everybody know what's kind of going on. I think that's a good thing, to be honest with you.
You know, have you watched some film, Kedrick, on R.J. Melendez, Ramsey's Melendez? He seems like a guy who would be the fit that they're looking for that athletic wing that Brad was talking about. He, you know, he's a slender guy, but he's got an interesting game. He's athletic. He can play above the rim and shoot the ball a little bit. What do you think their chances are to get Melendez?
You know, it's really what you brought him up. I talked to him last week, I believe, and, you know, at first I thought it was going to be a long stretch. You know, and when you talk to kids on the phone versus texting, I mean, it's a lot different because you get a different vibe. But when my vibe I got from him was that when this is all said and done, it's probably going to be between Illinois and Florida. He really, really likes Orlando, kind of like what Brad just mentioned. You know, always really, really, you know, connected. But I think, you know, as far as his game is concerned, he's a smooth, smooth basketball player. He's long. He reminds me, not a look like, but a Jerry Hetcher type basketball player. And they are missing a guy like that. You know, they have good guards, but they're missing that athletic wing. And, you know, maybe, you know, when it's all said and done, if some of these other schools could over-recruit, you know, they could pull a kid like Mendez. But if I were to guess right now, I could say to you, just judging by the conversation, you know, it'd probably go down to those two schools. And I'm sure the coaches know, you know, who they're up against when they're, you know, when it's going down to the end of the stretch with some of these kids.
John, the one thing that's jumped out to me, Brad, we'll get to you in a second, but one thing that's jumped out to me about this season is...
I was going
to
say, I'll add one kid to that list. Brandon Podziemski, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, I'll be honest with you. Brandon P is what we call him via text. But Brandon P is a kid from Wisconsin that they had a Zoom with last week. The Zoom went fantastic. The entire staff was on the Zoom. It went extremely well. They feel like they are in the mix with him as well in 2021. Really, kid who scored, I think he scored, what did he score the other night? 45 points or something, 46. Yeah, so fantastic player. If you watch film of him, every shot looks like it's going in. He's bouncy. He looks really good. So, you know, those are the kind of players. And I think, you know, Ked mentioned the other guys, the other two guys. Those are the three that I like the most probably of the guys. The other thing I'll tell you is that they are not going to sit. It's going to be the Wild West in transfer. So they're not going to reach and just take a guy to take a guy because they're going to wait until they see what's available via the transfer market. And I think that's where they're going with at the bigs. You know, that's why they haven't offered a lot of centers lately. They're not going to reach for a center, because they'll see what they can get in the transfer market. So anyway, sorry.
Well, that's cool. And you know, what I was going to ask you about, John, is one thing and, you know, check me if I'm wrong because I'm watching on TV. I haven't been to the State Farm Center like some of you guys, but there's a change in Brad Underwood this year. And I think it started a little bit last year, but more so this year. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that he knows he has a good team and he's got, you know, upperclassmen who are good leaders on the court, but a personality change a little bit. He's, you know, you don't see him yelling and screaming as much on the sideline. Do you think that's a positive development when it comes to recruiting, John? Because, you know, head coach has got to be the closer. And I think with his personality, it might have been a problem for him early on, but he seems like he's really changed this year.
Well, maybe he saw something in that. You know, I think today's player, they you need to love him up probably more than you gotta you know, chew him up. Brad can be kind of tough from what it looks like, you know. And I think I'm not too worried about that. I'm not too worried about his personality. I'm not too worried about how tough he is. I go a little bipolar sometimes when I think I talk to a couple of people and they say, my gosh, what happens if they lose Coach O? Is the recruiting going to fall? Because that's the guy who's really gotten a lot of the stars on this team. And what happens if Illinois has a big year and other people and other programs come sniff around? Or, you know, or should Illinois people be worried about losing the guy? But then I sit back and I look and see, you know, it seems like we've had this same discussion maybe the last couple of years of, man, they seem like they're missing on a lot of guys. But their list of guys that they can get is so much deeper than what I've seen over the past 10 years. It's like, okay, well, you missed on that guy. You got three more to pick from. You know, I'm not too worried about their recruiting. I'm not going to get too concerned about their recruiting because it seems like they know what they're doing with that. So, you know, I think Brad's personality change might help. I think you need to keep Coach O, but I'm not going to really worry about their recruiting because they're going to go out and find guys. You know, I mean, look what they've got on the roster, look where they've gone to get them. And I think they're going to go find guys.
Just a question that I have for you, Brad, and I guess Kendrick, you probably know this too, but the staff has seemed to do a really good job of recruiting in state. I know they missed on an EJ Liddell, but hitting on Adam Miller and obviously hitting on Io a couple of years ago, this recruiting class, the 21 class, didn't seem to have as much depth in the state of Illinois. And even like the top tier guys like a Max Christie or even like an Ahmad Bynum, like Illinois didn't seem to press or push there or even kind of be deep in there with those kids. Was something different with their pursuit of those recruits, or is it just the interest wasn't reciprocated in some of those higher profile recruits from in-state?
I can tell you for Max Christie, I just don't know how much his interest was. I mean, I remember one time, I think he did an interview once, and this was early on, and someone asked him his list of schools. He didn't even mention Illinois. So to me, I think it's a smart thing because it's a financial thing as well. But kids aren't interested, and you know they're not interested. You know, you have to be courteous. You have to reach out to them because the one thing you don't want to have is like what we're talking about with Lovey. You know, you don't want to recruit the kid. But with him, it just wasn't there, and he was never going to come. You know, all of us, you know, we've all tried to interview the kid. We tried talking to the kid. So, I mean, and it's not a deep class. So to me, and I give them credit, you know, and Chin and Brad and, you know, and Gentry, they all, you know, they have ties, which we all know. Sometimes you just have to go out of state. And this is one of those years, I mean, where there's just not a lot of talent in it, to be honest with you. That's my take on it.
Yeah, I would agree with what Ken said. The one thing, and we used to cut to the chase, cut through the BS, which guys can do that? And one thing about this staff is one thing that if I go back in a day, back to old staffs, there were guys like that were really good at cutting through the BS and figuring out what was actually going on in recruitment. Whether it was Jaron Sexton was really good at that. Tracy Webster was good at it before then. So these are guys that were really good at getting through that BS. Chin, these guys are really good at that and figuring out where they're at. And so they can tell you that it's not just lip service. It's actually, this kid has no interest, or it is lip service or it isn't. So they know what's up, and they'll tell you what's up. I mean, you know, they know what's up after talking to the kid. They can tell you, you know, what's going on. And we know this. I mean, we know what they're able to interact. And we, you know, and that's Ked and I know after 15 years of just BSing us too. And so I think it's an acquired taste, that ability to cut through the BS. And so that's kind of, I think they're able to do that. And they realized they didn't have shots at some of these kids. And so it made sense to just, you know, yeah, we're recruiting you, but.
Got a few audio problems with the Brad story.
Really, we realize we're not getting you, but we just have to do it because we don't want to make your AAU. What's wrong? You couldn't hear me?
You bugged out there for a little bit, but you're back
now.
Did
I get cut off?
It's all good, and you know.
Oh yeah. So no, I was just saying. I mean, they're.
Jim,
they're going to recruit kids that.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I said they're going to recruit. They're going to find the kids. I mean, they're going to recruit kids they have a shot at. You know, they're going to make the relate, build the relationships. But at the end of the day, they're going to, you know, they're going to be able to cut bait a little bit on those kids. So that's all I was trying to say. So sorry.
A few hiccups in our podcast there, but we're past that. And Jim, the expectations were so high for this team coming into the season. I think they were a top 10 team on everybody's polls coming into the season. They're having a good year. They're number 14 in the country and lost a few games. But, you know, I think the fans have forgotten because of all of the noise around this season with COVID and cutting down the schedule. And all, they forget how hard it is to win in the Big Ten Conference. And, you know, and when they get upset by a team like Maryland who played a really good game, the fans think that, you know, the sky's falling. But in past years, you know, you lose some of those games. We always have lost some of those games. There's a lot of talent in this conference. Maryland hasn't been winning, but they have a lot of long athletes who really played good defense against Illinois, made it tough on them. Illinois had, you know, had an off night, which you're going to have playing so many games. Do you think expectations have got a little out of hand early on? And where do you think the team's headed now?
Well, I don't necessarily think expectations were through the roof. I mean, yeah, Illinois was expected to be a good team, especially when Io and Kofi decided that they were coming back. You realize that, hey, this could be a special team. And then, it, you know, you saw the three games over the Thanksgiving break when they had their first three, when they scored 100 points, you know, in two of the three games. Everybody's like, wow, look at this offense, but look at who you were playing. And then you go and you play Baylor. You lose to Baylor. You go down and beat Duke. So it's like, you know, you're riding a roller coaster of expectations. You're low, then you're high, then you're back low again. Then, you know, you beat, you know, Indiana and Purdue at home. Then Maryland comes in. You know, you come back from 25, 26 points down at Northwestern to beat them. Then you come home expecting, you know, a Maryland team that you really didn't know much about that, you know, but, you know, in the Big Ten itself, and you mentioned it, there's not going to be an easy game in the Big Ten this season. I mean, the Big Ten is loaded from top to bottom. I mean, maybe Nebraska is not as strong as what normally would be. But, you know, a lot of it, you know, dealing back with the recruiting, with these kids not being able to take visits, you know, they're not seeing fans. Number one, they're not seeing fans in the stands if they'd come visit. Because that's a lot of the time when a recruit comes to visit, he wants to see the atmosphere he's going to be playing in. And this year, when you don't see any of that, you know, not having on-campus visits, it's kind of hard, you know, to, you know, go into an empty State Farm Center like we have been watching games. It's a different kind of an atmosphere. But, I mean, you know, in terms of the, you know, Illinois has a run now of where they've got, I think, three of the next four at home, including, you know, a big one coming up in a couple of weeks. But you don't want to look too far ahead because you got Ohio State this week, then next Tuesday against Penn State. But then you've got that Iowa game looming at the end of the month. And we all know, we've all seen what Iowa looks like. And, you know, they're loaded top to bottom. And that, you know, last year that Illinois-Iowa game was pretty electric in the State Farm Center and you know, on early March before all this hit. But, you know, you just got to realize that there's not going to be an easy out. And Brad said that himself before, that, you know, this conference is going to wear you out because there's, you know, so many good teams. Well, look how many are ranked and all that. So just, you know, You have to take that into consideration as well.
If you look around college basketball, I only see two teams in the entire country that you can say have a complete roster and have filled all the necessary positions to win a national championship, and that's Gonzaga and Baylor. And then you got a handful of other teams that are right there in the mix. But every team's got their weaknesses, and I think that – if you only watch Illinois games, if you're an Illinois fan and you only watch Illinois play, you're going to notice what the deficiencies are on the roster and on the court. For Illinois, they don't have a, like Brad was saying, they don't have a long athletic wing who you can go to score and to defend and rebound, kind of, you know, they're guard heavy, except for the big guy in the middle of Kofi. They have some weaknesses, but everybody else has weaknesses too. And the thing that Illinois has going for them is they have star power in Io DeSumo and Kofi Coburn. And if push comes to shove and you're struggling and some other guys aren't making shots, those are two guys that you can go to for a basket. Whether it's Kofi posting up or Io just taking somebody off the dribble and getting points when you need points. And that's going to be big in the NCAA tournament, having a star player who's a go-to guy who can get points for you, you know, in the clutch. And Io is probably the most clutch player in the country. So, Alec, let's talk about the reactionary kind of thing that we've seen on, you know, on our message board, in the game threads, on social media. It's been a bad year. 2020 sucked, and people are in a reactionary mood, I think. And when things aren't going well early on in the game, like they did against Northwestern, everybody starts panicking and falling off a cliff. And just talk about that a little bit. I know you're a social media guy. You're on Twitter all day, right? So when you should be studying. But talk about that a little bit and what you've seen from the fan base on social media.
Well, hopefully my parents don't listen to this, because now they're going to take away my social media privileges while I'm studying. No, just kidding. You know, honestly, I wasn't overly concerned about the slow starts against teams like Indiana and Purdue, because they ended up winning those games by 8 points. And I wasn't overly concerned by the start against Northwestern, because it wasn't that bad. The bad part of the Northwestern game was the second 10 minutes of the first half. And then obviously we all know what happened in the second half. But I don't think it's – at this point, I think it is concerning. And this basketball team, in my opinion, is underachieving. Like, that Maryland loss, by all stretch of the imagination, is a bad loss. And I know that Maryland team beat Wisconsin at the Kohl Center. I know that they've beaten Illinois now at the State Farm Center, but that's a game that you have to win to feel really good about your chances of winning the Big Ten, in my opinion. And now you just need to win more games that you maybe don't have as good of a chance to win. You might need to beat a Wisconsin again. You might need to beat an Iowa. And then Michigan's obviously, I think, exceeding everyone's expectations too. So what concerns me with the slow starts is you don't know what the problem is with them. And I say that because, well, Andre Curbelo would come in and the slow starts would seem to be fixed, but Andre Curbelo wasn't great against Northwestern in either half, and he really struggled against Maryland. And we've seen teams start to kind of adjust to his offensive game. And by doing that, they're going under screens and making him shoot, and they're taking away his ability to drive to the basket and do what he's best at, and that's create and find guys that are open, particularly Kofi on a pick and roll. So finding a way to get going from the get-go, I think, is huge for this team. And I think in a way, maybe this week off with the Nebraska game being canceled could be good for the program, because, or good for the team, because it might give them a whole nother week between that Maryland game, which is on Sunday, and then that Ohio State game, which is coming up with a Saturday, to really work on things and figure out what the cause of these lackluster parts and games are. I mean, they give up a 19-0 run to Purdue. You can't do that and expect to beat a Wisconsin, beat a Michigan, clearly beat an Iowa, because it's going to be really difficult to do that. Or even Ohio State's in that group as well. So finding a way to get going and not have a prolonged stretch of struggling to score. And that's something that we've seen in the Brad Underwood era for a while, is it struggle to score in the half court. Things just get really stagnant when they're able to run and get going and get transition and score within the first 7, 8, 10 seconds of the shot clock like he wants them to. They're really successful offensively, but finding a way to score in the half court on a more consistent basis is a key. And I think we saw down the stretch in the Maryland game when Kofi only had 2 field goal attempts in the second half and they were struggling. Like, that's someone that you should go to when you're struggling in the half court, because Maryland had no answer for him. Most teams in the Big Ten don't have an answer for him at the five this year like they did last year. I mean, Xavier Tillman's gone. Jalen Smith's gone from Maryland. The only big that on paper you think can compete with him for sure is Luka Garza. I mean, Hunter Dickinson, Nate Reavers, Micah Potter, can probably challenge him a little bit, but Kofi should have an edge on a lot of those guys as well. So you got to get back to your roots of, if you're struggling, get it to Kofi and get him a high percentage shot in the paint, because we've seen over the last few games his ability to really score around the rim. And he showcased, in my opinion at least, a much better repertoire of footwork, of drop steps, of spin moves, and using the glass and all that kind of stuff, where early in the season, right, like, we were concerned, and he looked like he was just trying to bully people like he did last year in the paint in those first three games, even against Baylor, and even against Duke as well. So seeing Kofi's improvement this season is all the more reason, in my opinion, that if they're in a little bit of a lull offensively, give it to him, get an easy bucket, get a layup, get a dunk, and get some momentum back.
You know, Andrew Cabrillo struggled a little bit, didn't bother me all that much. And, you know, there's always going to be some point in the season where a freshman is going to freshman, especially when you see a veteran team with such length. And, you know, he dribbled himself into trouble a lot. He got in there with guys that have really long arms and are good defenders, and Ned made some bad decisions. But he'll learn from it. He's going to be a good player at Illinois. But what really did bother me is that when Maryland started fronting Kofi Coburn, they didn't find another way of getting him the ball inside. And you're right. They had no one-on-one. Once he touched the ball, they had no answer for him. But they started fronting him, and he couldn't get open, and they couldn't get the ball to him. Brad, you know, Alex said he thinks the team is underachieving. And are they underachieving, or is this just who they are, personnel-wise?
I mean, I think that you can look at the two games they lost that they probably should have won and say they're underachieving when it comes to Duke and Missouri. But when you look at it in the grand scheme of things, they're ranked, you know, if you look at their rankings outside of, you know, preseason, I had different expectations. I predicted them. I think I put them 12th and they're ranked 14th, I think it is, or 14th, 15th, right in that range. And I've, you know, so for me, they're about where I expect them to be, even if they won the Maryland game. And so I kind of look at that. I understand why you would think they're underachieving, but they're ranked 8th in Pomeroy. I think they're 5th in Sagarin. I think they're 7th actually in Pomeroy, actually went up today. So the net rankings have them at 8th. So they're, I mean, if you look at that, they're looking at potentially like a 2-3 seed in the NCAA tournament, 4, you know, even a top 4. If they get top 4 seed in the NCAA tournament, I don't think it's an underachievement. But that said, they can't play the way they played and keep winning because the schedule is going to get more difficult. So I will say one thing. Bello is a kid that's intriguing because you talk about the length of Maryland giving him trouble. It did, without a doubt. The shots that he made against Maryland were terrible shots. I mean, the ones that that went in, wouldn't want to shoot. You don't want him shooting, but he made them. So it's like – the old no, yeah. So, but yeah, so I totally agree. It's just they got to get better. And they got to find a way to get Kofi the ball. One thing that they did the other day was you noticed that Kofi, and you're going to see this more and more, Maryland actually ran three guys at him at times because he was catching the ball in the center of the floor. There in the middle, he'd flash. They let him catch it there a couple times, and they ran three guys at him, which made it almost impossible to find because he's not a great passer. So they really need to get him so he's on one side so he always knows where the help's coming from so he can make sure that he knows exactly where the read is as opposed to when he gets it on the flash or when he gets it in a different spot than he's used to getting it. And so that's where they have to do a better job designing that. And Brad talked about that post-game. They have to do a better job with that.
All right. Well, thanks so much, guys. Orange and Blue News podcast. Tune in. We're going to try to do these every once in a while. And, you know, to cap this one off, to cap off this this mess here, we'll go around the horn, starting with Kedrick. And give me a prediction, guys. Where do you think this team's going to end up as far as an NCAA tournament seed? And what is some of the things you think they're going to accomplish in the tournament?
I think I agree with Brad. I think they're going to probably end up as a 4 or 5 seed. Me personally, and I'm not going to beat a dead horse, I kind of agree with that. I think they're better than that. In my opinion, going into the season, should have been a 2 or 3 seed. That's what everybody predicted, and that's what I thought should happen. But, you know, now they have to go out and prove it. They could get to the Sweet 16, maybe Final 8. They haven't proven they can shoot free throws consistent enough for me yet. And the unforced turnovers, when they can fix those two things, then I can see them, you know, advancing a little bit further. Until then, that's my take on it.
John, what are we going to see in March?
You know, I think they're probably going to be around a 4 seed. What I'd really like to see is more intensity, fewer droughts, and I want to see Underwood and his staff being able to counter the counters, you know, figure out, you know, in the shell game of the game, they got to figure things out sometimes too. And it still comes up to matchups whenever you get, I think this is a Sweet 16 team. I think they get to the second weekend and then it's all about matchups and just, you know, just putting games together. And I think once you get to that point, come on, people. Illinois hadn't been there in so long. Let's have fun and enjoy this and see if, you know, they're going to get in the NCAA tournament. I think they're going to get the second weekend, and let's have some fun with it.
What do you think, Brad, seed-wise? What are they going to be?
Yeah, so I'm right now I have them as a 3. I could slide them to a 4, potentially. I mean, I have them on that line. I think it depends on how they finish, but I'm going to put them in that 3-4 spot. I think in the NCAA tournament, there are two things that come to for Illinois. And here's the scary part for me. I think when they go into the NCAA tournament, if you're a lower seeded team, like you're seeded 13th or 14th, you want to play Illinois because I don't, a 2 seed or a 1 seed playing them in the Sweet 16, I don't think you want to play them, because they're going to bring it that day. So they're a really weird team that we down. I mean, they can bring it for – so that's my take. I think they're going to make the Sweet 16, and then, like John said, it's a crapshoot.
Jim, Alec on deck.
Well, I think that they're probably a 3 or 4 right now. I kind of agree with everybody else. And I mean, the NCAA tournament, for one, is going to look a lot different this year, being played in, you know, one geographical location, being Indianapolis, which makes it easier for us, being 2 hours west of Indianapolis, if we're allowed to attend, because we'll be able to, you know. And I think just with the whole thing of the Big Ten getting the schedule getting tougher, right now is the time where Illinois should be racking up wins, and they're 5-2 in the league, so, and they're, I think they're third place right now or tied for third. And but, you know, they've still got games coming up against Iowa, Michigan. You know, Michigan's on the road, Michigan State's on the road. I mean, don't count out, you know, Wisconsin and things like that. So, but I think that, you know, it's pretty much par for the course right now. But I mean, they do have to get, you know, better and learn to close out games. I mean, you know, Maryland, they kind of backslid a little bit, and, you know, of course, that's just one game. So I mean, they can bounce back, and it all depends how they come out and with tomorrow, you know, Saturday, and how they look against Ohio State after being off 6 days. Cause I mean, they've had a few games now where they've had 6 or 7 days in between. So hopefully they've been able to practice and work out some of those kinks, so that way towards the stretch run, they can, try to improve their seed a little bit.
Yeah, I'm in the same group as everyone else. I think they're probably closer to a 3 seed or a 4 seed right now than they are to a 2 seed. Just looking at Joe Lenardi's most recent bracketology, and I know it's mid-January, so it doesn't really matter, but it is kind of a fun matchup for Illinois, as he has them as a 3 seed playing Grand Canyon. They play the winner of SLU in North Carolina or Oklahoma, which should be really fun, in my opinion, an opportunity to play a really good SLU team, or obviously North Carolina. But I think what should make Illinois fans optimistic about this Illinois team is that Brad Underwood has proven that in the past couple of seasons, at least, that his teams are playing the best at the end of the season. And this team was young, and they did bring in new pieces with Adam Miller and Andre Curbelo and all of those other pieces that we've spent time talking about. But if they get to a point where they're able to win, and we've talked about this 5-game stretch how many times are, where they play Michigan State, Iowa, Wisconsin, Indiana, and I think Michigan, if they win four of those five games, I mean, there's no reason that Illinois can't get up to a 2 line. So as long as Illinois continues to improve, I think that that's something that should keep Illinois fans optimistic. But right now, I think they're closer to a 3, and if, there's no reason that they can't make a Final Four run if their shooters get hot and Io keeps shooting it from 3. If Adam Miller keeps continuing to improve from 3, as we've seen over the past couple of games, Trent Frazier gets going like we know we can as well. And I think that's really the key to this Illinois team, is having a third score, having a third, fourth guy show up especially in the NCAA tournament when you play a really good team, because you can't just win with Io and Kofi like we saw against Maryland. You need some alternative scoring.
You know, I'm just grateful that there's going to be a tournament. You know, after the rug got pulled out last year, it was such a surreal situation when COVID popped up and they canceled the Big Ten tournament, and it just snowballed from there, and you lost the NCAA tournament, and you didn't know how long this was going to last or what the state of sports was going to be in the country. You know, we're going to have a tournament. I'm pretty confident about that this year. I think college sports has found a way to play through a pandemic and still keep the athletes safe. It's just a shame that there probably won't be fans and the whole thing's going to be in Indianapolis, but you know, there's going to be a tournament. The one thing that concerns me about Illinois is lack of tournament experience. Last year was that year to get into the tournament with a young team and learn how to win, you know, when it becomes a possession game, when everybody's playing defense. And, you know, young teams, they're not a young team anymore, but young teams have a tendency when they get into tournament play to change things. They feel that they have to change things to compete at a higher level instead of just being themselves. And that's something that you find when there's lack of tournament experience. You would have loved to have last year's tournament just to build on and then have this year's tournament to really make a strong run. For Illinois, I think it's going to come down to what it always comes down to in the NCAA tournament, and that's guard play and three-point shooting. You know, they're going to have to make shots, and they're going to have to get shots made by people who aren't necessarily scoring a lot of points for you all the time. You know, Adam Miller is going to have to make shots. Trent Frazier is going to have to make shots. You know, when they extend the defense on Williams, he's got a real problem putting the ball on the floor and scoring off the bounce. But you know, for a guy who shoots 60%, over 60% from three, he'll have to hit shots, but that's what it's going to come down to in the tournament. You know, getting away from Big Ten play is always helpful too, I think, where teams haven't scouted you as much because there's a lot of really good coaches in the Big Ten. So, you know, I think they're going to do well in the tournament, be a four seed, and they should make a run at least to the Sweet 16 and hopefully beyond that. So thanks a lot, guys. Another podcast in the books, and take care. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And then till next time, thank you.